Round two is no joke. This is where we separate the pretenders from contenders. Get some skin in the game with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. They are offering free-to-play pools every day of the basketball playoffs, offering players a free shot at up to $10,000 in total prizes each day. The best part is that it's free-to-play. DraftKings free-to-play pools are easy to enter. Just download the DraftKings app, go to Pools, and choose from a wide variety of free contests for an opportunity to win cash prizes. All you have to do is answer a handful of questions around what you think is going to happen during that day's basketball games and track your results throughout the evening. Questions will range from which team will hit the most threes to which team will score first. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings app now and use promo code TBPN when you sign up to get your free shot at up to $10,000 in total prizes every day of the basketball playoffs. Head to DraftKings Pools page to get your shot at huge cash prizes. That's promo code TBPN for a limited time only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Welcome to Spurscast, episode 614. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on the Spurscast. Today, I'll be joined by Project Spurs writer Colin Reed. In this episode, Colin and I will answer off-season questions sent in from Twitter. Let's go ahead and get started. Colin, how have you been?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well myself. You know, this is obviously, you know, it's off-season mode for the Spurs here, so we want to, you know, just kind of get some questions I asked yesterday on Twitter for those that follow me at Paul Garcia NBA. I just asked, you know, what are some off-season questions you had on your mind? So we got a lot of questions here, so we're going to kind of just dig into those. But before we go through those questions, Colin, let's go through the latest news since I last recorded a week ago with Michael DeLeon, and that was the lottery coin flip. Mike and I had mentioned how that was about to take place at the time when now it did take place, and so here were the results. The Hornets and the Spurs had a coin flip to determine who's going to be in the lottery order 11th or 12th, and the Spurs did lose that lottery a coin flip. So the way this works is basically as long as the Spurs, if the Spurs get into the top four of a lottery pick, they get to be in the top four wherever that pick is. But if they don't, well then they're going to end up being picking 12th in the first round. So that's how that works. In terms of their odds, they do have a 1.7% chance of winning the lottery, so getting the number one pick overall, and then an 8% chance of ending up in the top four. So there's a better chance of them ending up in the top four. And then it's notable because now that we're in June, it's about 20 days away. You and I are recording this on a Wednesday evening. The lottery drawing is going to take place on June 22nd, so sometime this month. Did you have any comments, Colin, about just those results and things and what's going to happen there?
You know, not much. This pretty much locks the Spurs into that 12th spot. The 8% chance of jumping up is pretty low, but also, and I haven't done the quick math here, but the chance of them jumping or falling down. So what that would take is the Spurs not jumping up and Indiana or Golden State jumping up into the top four, which they have a 4.8% chance and a 2.4% chance of doing respectively. So the chance of them staying at 12 is very, very high. I would say overall around probably like 90% or so. And then they have a better chance of going into the top four than they do of falling back. So it's probably going to be a pick very similar to where they picked last year.
Yeah, so exactly. You know, that's kind of how I'm looking at it on the cap sheet. You know, I'm basically giving them for that cap slot at the 12th pick. And then, you know, Benjamin Bornstein, as I have him on during the summer before the draft comes, I'll be asking him more so, you know, targets in that 12th pick area, just because, again, that's kind of where we think it's going to end up. It's very unlikely. It would be a good thing for the Spurs if they got, you know, a top four or even won that lottery, but it's just very unlikely. So we're just going to base it on our projections going forward. It's basically we're assuming that they're going to get the 12th pick there. So we're going to go to just basically jump right into these Twitter questions, because we got a lot of these questions on Monday or on Tuesday that I had asked Spurscast listeners or those that follow me on Twitter to send these in. And so Yeah, so let's just dive right in, Colin. So again, these are off-season questions that you all the fans had, and Colin and I are going to kind of just give our best answers and opinions here on some of these questions. So let's first begin with what I'm calling more research-based questions, because these are questions where I kind of had to dig up some information, and they're good questions because it's really informative, even for myself, just learning about some of these players and things like that. So let's begin with the first one. The first one is from at GZR Res Akmaird. I don't know if I read that right. Anyway, the question is, will the Spurs try to extend Lonnie Walker the fourth this offseason? This is a very interesting question. So let's just get some quick background here on the situation for Lonnie. So we know that he's guaranteed this coming season, upcoming season. However, the Spurs can extend him, and then that would prevent him from becoming a restricted free agent next offseason. So next summer, Lonnie can become a restricted free agent if the Spurs don't extend him. We have seen the Spurs extend other first round picks recently. And this is something Bobby Marks noted in his offseason piece on the Spurs. We know that they did extend DeJounte Murray a 4-year $64 million deal when he was up for the extension. They extended Derek White just last offseason with a 4-year $70 million deal. And Bobby noted that the Spurs always would take until the final day before the deadline to make these extension announcements. And so basically the Spurs have until the day before the regular season begins to extend Lonnie Walker. So they have through this whole offseason, but then right before the regular season begins is when they have to make that decision if they're going to extend Lonnie. We did see, though, recently that the Spurs did not extend Jakob Poeltl because, he was big, and they basically took their chances in the restricted free agent market. And we saw that, no teams gave Poeltl an offer sheet, and he quickly re-signed with the Spurs close to that MLE level. Now, something Bobby Marks also noted was that he kind of gave a projection of a kind of salary Lonnie could expect from a extension, which is in the $10 to $12 million range. So maybe we're assuming maybe like a 4-year, $40 million contract, or a 48 for four years kind of deal here. So, Colin, what's your answer here for this first question? Do you think the Spurs will try to extend Lonnie this offseason?
I don't think so. I know that the Spurs have offered a couple of extensions in the past couple of seasons, and that actually is something that they didn't really do in recent history before that very often. They didn't even extend Kawhi Leonard, which there was reasons for that with LaMarcus Aldridge mm-hmm. being available the next summer and stuff like that. But really, it's not something they were typically want to do. And I think if you look at the situations, there are two big reasons why DeJounte Murray and Derek White got extensions. And I think it's because there are factors that made them give them extensions is mm-hmm. the reason why they're the exception, and players like Jakob Poeltl and Lonnie Walker are not. So for DeJounte Murray, he was coming off an injury, so they're able to sign him to an extension at a number that they, I'm sure, felt like was cheaper than what his market value should be. So they're able to get him on a good deal coming off of his injury. And then Derek White, this summer, there's going to be a good amount of teams with cap space, but not a lot of quality point guard depth on the market. And Derek White is a player who, with his skill set, can fit into a lot of teams. So he is a player that would have a high asking price in restricted free agency. So having him locked in and not hit restricted free agency is a safer bet if they want to keep him long term versus a player like Jakob Poeltl or Lonnie Walker, who they can probably take it to restricted free agency with. And if the asking price gets too high, they might part with the player, kind of like they did with Kyle Anderson, mm-hmm. Which took, three or four seasons before that looked like a bad move, Yeah. And then, so honestly, I don't think so. I think that the reason why they extended Derek White and DeJounte Murray was just kind of a situational thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that they look at all of the young guys as potential parts of their future, but I think those two in particular are really viewed by the team as foundational pieces of what they're building going forward.
Yeah, and I feel like, in a way, just to the amount of work the amount of seasons that Derek and DeJounte had already played, you kind of knew where they were kind of projecting to go in their careers at that point, kind of. I know it's a weird thing to say, but Lonnie, it still seems like he's really he hasn't quite found exactly what he's going to be as a player. He's still young, and I think the one thing we can say that he has is definitely the three-point shooting. That's his main staple. We see the athleticism, the ability to attack, but that's probably the part that's not consistent. We see on defense, his numbers were struggling a little bit this past season. And so, I'm also wondering, because I know Bobby Marks mentioned this in his piece, that, it's up to Lonnie too and his agent, if they want to, sign for that amount, $10 to $12 million, or if they would think they can get more next offseason when more teams should have more cap space, and there's a bigger free agent group. So yeah, I'm also, I don't know. I think if it's $10 to $12 million, they might take that chance. So I'm more so. You say no, but I'm more so in the maybe category here. I think that there's if it's for that amount, 10 to 12, I think that they could do it. And again, it's only if Lonnie would agree to that, and if the Spurs offered it. But I'm not so sure, because again, like I said, I feel like they still want more time to see if they can get him to be more consistent. You know, in learning how to attack and things like that. Those areas that he's going to work on going forward. But again, I'm kind of more so. It's a maybe for me. If again, it has to be that amount. If it's anything more than that, I don't think that the Spurs would offer that. Or you know, and I don't think, you know, we'll see exactly if he signs it. So that's a good question. Again, that's something to watch.
You actually asked me the same question about Derek White a year ago, and I gave all the same reasons for no that I just gave about Lonnie Walker.
Oh, you said no? Yeah.
Yeah, and you, well, but you actually felt a lot stronger about it being yes for Derek White in that situation, given all of the reasons that he did eventually sign. So you swayed me on that. I remember we had the same conversation a year ago about Derek White, but I kind of agree with the whole maybe. I feel stronger about this one not happening than I did with Derek White when I was eventually able to be swayed. And then we were both right. That was cool.
For sure. But like, you kind of understand what I was saying, right? Like, I felt like DeJounte and Derek, we knew exactly like kind of what they were as players, or what they were going to be. Whereas Lonnie, he's still like almost like an open book in a way. But, you know, and so I don't know if the Spurs are ready to, you know, invest for 4 years in that, in a contract for a player like that. And again, like, I was more sure about Jakob not getting an extension just because I felt like, you know, the big man position is one of those positions where you're not going to get a lot of, you know, qualifying offers for a player like Jakob at the time. So that's why, you know, the Spurs were able to retain him. So again, it's an interesting question. We'll see. I already forgot that I thought that Derek would get that extension. And again, the Spurs are like Bobby Marks noted here, the Spurs are going to probably keep us in suspense, because like he said, the last two times they did this with Derek and DeJounte, they waited until the final day to make that announcement. So you know, we could be waiting all offseason to see what happens. So again, we'll see. All right. So our next question comes from at Paul O'Vilra. His question is, were the pre-All-Star break defensive numbers for real? And can this group really be a top defensive team? So let's just give you, just provide some data here. So pre-All-Star break, the Spurs were the fifth best defense according to Cleaning the Glass, holding opponents to 109.6 points per 100. After the All-Star break, this team just completely fell apart defensively, and that we're going to talk about the reasons for that. They ended up being 24th after the All-Star break on defense at 115.5 points per 100, according to Cleaning the Glass. And again, the reason why I say Cleaning the Glass for Spurscast listeners is that Cleaning the Glass does take out garbage time kind of minutes. So a lot of this data is more the competitive minutes. So overall, the Spurs were the 13th ranked defense, according to Cleaning the Glass, at 112.8 points per 100. So let's just, before I have Colin answer here, let's just give some context here about that pre-All-Star number and then the post-All-Star number. So pre-All-Star number, we know that the schedule is a lot easier for this team. They were relatively healthy aside from missing Derek White for the beginning of the season. And then also, you got to keep in mind that LaMarcus Aldridge is part of that group, because he was on the team playing a lot of minutes at the beginning there for the beginning of the year. Post-All-Star break, we do know, you know, the circumstances for this team. They ended up pre-All-Star break also, they got COVID those last 2 weeks before the All-Star break. So that's also something to note as well. But it was later, right before the break. Post All-Star break, we know that this team had, the schedule was just grueling for them. They had a tough, opponents that they had to play. They had no consecutive days off from All-Star break all the way to the end of the season. And then we know that the injury bug hit them. Multiple players were out, especially Derek White. They lost him those last 2 or 3 weeks of the season. So that's some context about those numbers. So Colin, go ahead and take the answer first. What do you think? Was that real for this team, the pre-All-Star break defense? And do you think they can be a top defensive team next season?
I think it's somewhere in the middle. You know, I think that not only there's just the dichotomy of what the season was before the All-Star break and what the season was after the All-Star break is just so stark in comparison to best case scenario, easy schedule, you know, things went fairly well, better than expected over the first couple months. And then the second half of the season was the exact opposite, just completely disastrous. Most of the things that you would expect to go wrong did go wrong.
Yeah.
And you know, they looked, we talked about that on the Spurscast, they looked gassed from a week or two after the All-Star break, which would have been their break, and they didn't stop looking gassed the rest of the season. But it's hard because before the All-Star break was so favorable for them. So to me, I do think that they have the foundations for an elite defense, because I do think that when you have perimeter defenders like they have in DeJounte Murray and Derek White, and you have a center that is as good on defense as Jakob Poeltl, you can have a very high level defense. Will it be fifth over the course of an entire season? I think it could be if they got lucky. I think that they probably are closer to that 5-10 range, where 5 is the ceiling for what the season was, and maybe more of the 7-10 is more accurate of who they are. And I think that the 24 is just what it looks like when the wheels completely fall off.
Okay, so I'm kind of a little bit kind of like you, or I'm like more so like in that, you know, right late 10th, around that area, like 8th to like 13th, I would say is where I'm at right now. And there's a number of factors here. Part of it, like we said, you know, like you just basically explained it very well there about how, you know, how big of an impact the schedule was. And also is the fact that, like, we don't know exactly who's coming back and who can make this team better or worse on defense. You know, if somebody like DeMar DeRozan leaves, well, then I think that they you know, it depends who they fill in for his spot and you know, who they signed this offseason, whether that those players are going to help the team defensively, because they can get better defensively. But like you've mentioned before, you know, this team needs shooting. And if you're going to add shooting, there's not many 3-and-D players out there, so you're going to probably take a hit on defense with whatever player you're bringing in. You're probably bringing in a shooter who's going to probably be a liability on defense, you know, unless your team scheme is very good. And so, you know, that's why I say I'm more so like, I wouldn't say they're going to be a top 5 defense right now, just based on what I see, but I'd say more so, I mean, it could definitely crack the top 10, where they're like, you know, like I said, like 8 to like 13th, somewhere in that range is where I'm thinking initially, again, without knowing who's coming back. Because, yeah, they definitely have the foundation there, and they know, you know, they've like Mike and I talked about last week when we did our season review on this team. They know they're finally getting back to those tenets of the Spurs basketball and defense, where, you know, they're not fouling much. They're doing a good job of forcing teams to take mid-rangers. You know, they're doing all those old components, you know, shuffling players into Jakob Poeltl, and he's there as their anchor defensively. So, yeah, it for me, it's more so like for right now, from what I see on paper, and then the possible moves they can make, I feel like they're more so like in that right around top 10, but not quite top 5 in my opinion. I'd have to see exactly who they bring in for that to happen. Okay, our next question comes from at Kel79, and I'm going to go ahead and apologize now to at Kel, because I do want to address this question at a future date. His question is free agency targets, question mark. So basically he's asking, you know, what free agents are we looking at for the Spurs this offseason? And the reason why I say I want to address this again as well is because I am building a huge free agent database that I'm going to plug here toward the end of the episode on analyzingtheleague.com, one of our other sites for Project Spurs Network. And so until I get like more data and I start really getting that system going, I'm not really going to have a ready answer for you, but I have some names that I just kind of jotted down. But Colin, I'll let you go first. Who just, you know, again, if you also want to put some more research into this, I know it's really early, just initially, who are some names that you've thought of?
Sure. So I know that I had talked about kind of in a discussion that we were having among the Project Spurs people, I had talked about Duncan Robinson being a good fit, mm-hmm. in terms of just the shooting is just something that they are desperately in need of right now. And I think that they have the kind of cap space to sign a free agent like that this summer if they ever would, just because they're going to have to throw kind of a huge offer sheet his way and see if Miami is going to blink or not. And Miami might just be willing to match everything just because of what that kind of shooting does for their team. But the Spurs are not really ever going to have this kind of cap space again to have the opportunity to overpay for a restricted free agent, which for a lot of the restricted free agents that people get super excited about, the Spurs are going to have to overpay because they're going to have to convince the previous team. If they're a good player, the previous team probably wants to keep them, with the exception of like Lauri Markkanen as someone that they've been linked to, who it does seem like the Bulls and Lauri Markkanen are probably heading their own ways now. But for like John Collins and for Duncan Robinson, these are players that the original teams will probably want to keep, especially given both of these players' performances post-trade deadline, when John Collins' name is at least brought up. So the Spurs are going to have to overpay if it's a restricted free agent. My favorite of the restricted free agents is Duncan Robinson, just because I know that there's been a huge discussion over the Spurs' lack of depth at big over this past season, which, to like, I get it and I don't, just because when you have a big who is so good at most big things, like Jakob Poeltl, like, he's not as skilled as like Nikola Jokic, of course, but when it comes to like general big roles, he fills that so well that I feel like the big wings who can shoot well are like way more valuable to this team right now. So yeah, basically shooting, you know, you had kind of a couple of names that you threw out to me that I definitely agree with. The Evan Fourniers, you know, shooting and size on the wings is really, I think, their best bet, which Those are hard players to come by, but when they have the kind of cap space they do this offseason. And I also think if DeMar DeRozan walks, which this would be a good reason to maybe keep DeMar DeRozan, they're going to be incredibly light on creation. And they really need a player who can make shots for himself and for others, because that is going to be a huge struggle for this team if DeMar DeRozan leaves in the offseason.
Yeah, so you know, just like you mentioned there, you know, I jotted down just a few names, but again, I want to give this more time to really dig into some more of the data and get a better list together for you at Cal79. So just some players. So, like, if we're talking about shooting, just players that Colin just mentioned there, Duncan Robinson, I wrote down Evan Fournier, maybe somebody like Malik Monk, Gary Trent Jr. I've always thought was a good shooter. That's again to cover that you're shooting. If that's where the Spurs want to focus, if they're looking, just to give it a shot, because they're going to have max cap space if Kawhi Leonard declines his player option, just give him a call, see what he says, his agent. I don't think it'll happen just because of how things ended, but you just never know. So, definitely you just want to at least make one pitch at Kawhi if that's the case. Just imagine him, build back as the core piece. If they really want to, DeRozan's not a bad player to bring back as well. Like you mentioned, if they're not going to have a lot of shot creation if he leaves, and so maybe if they want to roll it back for a year or two with DeRozan as the primary ball handler, they could look at him. In terms of those younger bigs, Markkanen and Collins, definitely give them restricted free agent offer sheets. Give them offer sheets, should I say? I think for sure now the way they're playing the Hawks, I think Atlanta's going to match anything that Collins gets. Whereas Markkanen is definitely way more gettable. I think that the Bulls might be willing to let him walk to a different team. And then, just to shore up some defense and rebound, and maybe looking at somebody like Rashawn Holmes is a good name there. So again, I haven't quite gone into the, done a lot of research here on this question, but I do definitely want to tackle this question as the offseason goes along. Another player I wrote down was just somebody like Otto Porter Jr., just kind of give you some 3-and-D there on the wing, a big wing who could either start at the three or even play some four or even come off the bench and, just gives the Spurs some more depth and can be a good 3-point shooter, for a season. So again, those are just some initial names, but again, we'll kind of dig in more as the offseason goes along. Our last research-based question here from Twitter came from at KXNG_shots. Their question is, what are your thoughts on Jared Vanderbilt with the Spurs? So just some background on Jared Vanderbilt. He is a 6'9 big, a restricted free agent. If the Timberwolves make him a restricted free agent for $2 million was the qualifying offer for him. He's mainly a big who scores near the rim. 87% of his shots come near the rim, according to Cleaning the Glass. He's more so known for his defensive presence, 2.1% block percentage, which is at the 66th percentile amongst bigs, 2.3% steal percentage, which is in the 97th percentile amongst bigs, according to Cleaning the Glass. And then he's slightly above average on the boards, and then he does foul a little bit too much here on defense. That's one of his main weaknesses areas. And then 66% of his minutes were at the four this past season with the Timberwolves. So, Colin, do you have any thoughts on Jared Vanderbilt?
Yeah, so my big thing here is that I just kind of going back to, obviously, I'm very, very high on the role that Jakob Poeltl fills on this team. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the Spurs need another defensive specialist at big. I really do think they need a big who is more skilled, more stretch, more creation type of player. And one of the things that we are seeing around the league is where you have this four that you can play next to a defensive center, like the John Collins and Clint Capella. Then what the Hawks sometimes do is play John Collins at five. And when you have a skilled big who's maybe not on good at defense, that's okay for him to play the center against bench lineups because you're not going up against as high-powered of offensive. So for me, like, I love defense. I love kind of these metrics of players who are defensive specialists. But I think that the Spurs have a couple of defensive specialists in their rotation, especially in their starting lineup. Mm-hmm. And if they are looking for another big, I obviously someone who's not a huge negative on defense, someone who can play next to Jakob Poeltl. But I think someone who's maybe just offensively skilled, who can shoot threes, who can make good open passes, who can create any sort of gravity, I think is what the Spurs need more than a third defensive specialist who is maybe not as solid on the offensive end on the floor in their starting group or in their rotation at all.
Yeah, and for me, it's more so about Lucas Samanche's development. You don't want to put another four out there just after he just had to basically play behind Rudy Gay this past season, and so I really feel like you got to lead the spot there for let him get some minutes. This has to be the season where Luka gets as much time to just grow as a player and see what he can do in a real role. So I don't think you want to put another four there. If Vanderbilt could be if the Spurs could sign him for probably less than like $5 million, maybe it's not bad to have like as a third big on the team. But again, like you kind of just covered there, Colin. There's no need to add so many extra bigs basically at this point for this team. Like you said, there's probably more so need for offensive creation from the big spot, and that's something like Collins and like something like Markkanen would help out with the side in terms of that. So again, I'm not as high on Vanderbilt to come to Spurs, just because I do want to see Luka get a lot of minutes. Luka Šimunić here. All right, so now let's go to some other questions that are still from Twitter that I got. These are more like open discussion type of questions. So these aren't going to have like a lot of research and numbers and data behind them. So the first question comes from @JassKeller. The question is, aren't all players supposed to be 3-and-D guys now? I don't know how you want to answer that one. Go ahead, Colin.
So I do think, oh man, I looked at this question, I had an answer for it, and now it's just becoming the Jakob Poeltl love fest for me. I do think there is a role for a player like Jakob Poeltl who does not shoot threes and creates gravity in other ways, someone who sets hard screens, someone who rolls to the basket. I think outside of your center, and outside of someone who's creating like vertical spacing versus like spacing around the arc, I think basically 1 through 4, yes, the goal is maybe for everyone to be 3-and-D. I do think that you can get away. So I know that everyone talks about DeMar DeRozan's flaw being that he doesn't shoot three-pointers, and I actually think that the creation he brings to this team, and especially creating shots for open three-point shooters, kind of negates some of that. I think that his bigger thing is the defense. If he was like, a neutral or a positive on defense, he would fit this team so, so much better, especially if they had other shooters. So you can get away with a player like DeMar DeRozan. Let's say he had more on the defensive end, but he still wasn't a shooter. You put capable shooters around him and he's such a good creator. That's totally fine. I mean, that's been the formula with LeBron James his whole career, and he's improved at shooting over the course of his career. But I think shooting plus creation plus a big on the roster who can protect the rim when you're in those matchups is like the recipe for success for me. I don't think you need everyone to be 3-and-D, but I think when it comes to your off guard and your wings, that obviously is something that you would love to have.
Yeah, and just my answer for this question is just like, everybody wants a 3-and-D player, but there's just not that many players out there. Like you said, like not every good quality shooter is a good defensive player. Like we've just mentioned, a lot of these free agents that if the Spurs target them, these are not going to be guys who are going to probably improve your defense. They're going to be guys that are going to kind of get targeted by the offense and the other team each night. And so, you got to kind of build a system where you're able to cover the holes that these guys are going to create. So yeah, I know that they're trending toward that, but again, I just don't think that there's enough players out there. And so like, there's going to be a lot of times be more shooting, more so the shooting skill is going to be higher rather than the defensive skill for a lot of these players. And then we've seen though, guys have fallen out of the league if they can't play, if they can't just shoot as well. Like if they're just defensive guys only, well then they struggle to stay in the league if they're not making threes. And so yeah, so again, that's the theory there. But like Colin kind of mentioned, there's just different ways you can build your team. And so and in my opinion, just not enough 3-and-D players out there, even though that's what you want the trend to be. Our next question comes from @Josu_JR2. The question is, which player improved the most and which player disappointed the most on the Spurs this season? Go ahead and take it. What's your answer?
So for disappointing, this is going to be a cop-out answer. I was disappointed that we couldn't get Derek White consistently the entire season because bubble Derek was so exciting, and I think that injuries and just the weirdness of the season, to no fault of his own, just kept that from being a reality. And I think that if the Spurs would have had that for a whole season, that they would, they probably would have been a first round out, but they probably would have made the playoffs, honestly, just because of the type of player he was in the bubble. So it was, he as a player in his development did not disappoint. The way that the season turned out because of circumstances outside of his control was a little disappointing just because of how good he was in the bubble and how people were just expecting that this is going to be who he is from now on. And things like the COVID stuff and injuries just kept that from being a reality. I think a big step for Luka Šimunić coming into the rotation, I think that's huge for him, kind of because last year at this time we were wondering, what is his future with the league as a whole. Obviously, it only been one season, but like, where is all of this going to end up? Mm-hmm. Devin Vassell in his first season played way more than rookies normally do. And I see your notes, and again, I'm going to continue the love train. Jakob Poeltl had a great season. He definitely one of the to me, you know, just an amazing signing at $9 million a year. Obviously, you don't want to give like a whole bunch of money to a one-dimensional center. But when you're looking at like $9 to $10 million a year for what he brings to the team, that's just insane value. And, you know, I felt that way last offseason, and I feel much stronger about that this season after the season he had.
Yeah, so I'm kind of with you. My disappointed answer is also like a cop-out. I just say it's just the season. It's not just for the Spurs. I think it's just for the whole NBA. You know, the fact that we couldn't get, like, even though the season's about to be finished, we don't know exactly what this data even means because of the fact these circumstances these players were in. They were playing in half-empty arenas for the majority of the year. The schedules were grueling for some of these teams. Just catching COVID, a brand-new disease that, you know, had never existed in the world until just, just last year. And so I think that's probably the most disappointing. Is like, we don't know exactly, what a normal season is going to look like in the future, and so even how these players played and the stuff that they their performances, it's not going to quite be there, and of course and that kind of goes to like the injury bug and stuff like that. So again, it's just more of a cop out on my end. As far as the most improved, just kind of what Colin said there, because he saw my notes, it is Jakob Poeltl. Just the fact that he started out coming off the bench, we saw that just the numbers that he put up on defense, just the way he protected the rim, just all the different defensive metrics I've read throughout the entire season. He was one of those players right there alongside like guys like Brook Lopez and Miles Turner. Night to night, he was kind of in that place in terms of some of those advanced defensive metrics. So he's just been a really good player to improve and become like an anchor for the Spurs' defense. Coach Pop, really complimented him this season and says, their defense would not have improved like this without Jakob Poeltl's performance. And then also even on offense, Coach Pop talked about how they wanted him to be more aggressive on offense, be more of a threat out there rather than just, being a screen setter who just rolls. And he did that. We saw a little floater coming to play. He was more aggressive attacking. We saw him get to the free throw line. He had his issues at the free throw line, but then he kind of worked on those toward the end of the year. So I just feel like Jakob became just really did a lot, did a lot there for this season to now become basically that anchor for the Spurs. And like you mentioned, Colin, he's basically right at the MLE in terms of the deal that he resigned with the Spurs for. So yeah, Jakob would be my answer for that question. Our next question comes from @badfeeling, PDCST, so like podcast. They ask, if Pop retires, who would you pick as head coach? Who from outside the organization do you like? Okay, what's your answer?
So just kind of one of the things from listening to other people, kind of like the Nate Duncan idea of right now, if you look at head coaches that are wildly successful, a good place to go is assistant coaches that have not yet been head coaches. So you look at the like Taylor Jenkins having done an amazing job in Memphis. And there's basically examples like that all over the league. So to me, looking at people on the staffs of some of these other successful head coaches, even the Taylor Jenkins coaching staff or the Quinn Snyder coaching staff, I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of Monty Williams. And if the Suns had not hired him two seasons ago, if they were able to hire him, if he was a coaching free agent, I would be thrilled with that. And personally, that's just because I really like him as a human being. I don't, I mean, he's awesome as a basketball coach, but it'd be fun to have, just another kind of amazing person, running the helm for the Spurs. But I think kind of the biggest market inefficiency when it comes to coaching is assistant head coaches who are like not yet discovered. And so you like get a list of like the best coaching staffs around the league, your Eric Spoelstra's, the Raptors coaching staff, like all, and you just like look at one of these undiscovered, like you have your Chris Finches that went to Minnesota this year and all of a sudden it looked good. So that's kind of my, I guess it kind of is a cop-out answer again, but just the unknown assistant coaches on the successful teams that have good coaching right now, I think are a really great place to look.
Okay, the way I read this question was like the first part of it is if Pop retires, who would you pick? I guess I was assuming amongst the Spurs assistant coaches. So I would have my answer, that's how I interpret it. And so my answer there would have been Becky Hammond. If it had to be a Spurs assistant coach, so I really feel like Becky would be the coach again. She's got that experience. She's been there for a few years now. She knows Pop's system. She's built a really good rapport there with the younger players, especially because guys like DeJounte and Derek, they played they've been playing there for a number of years, and even some of those younger players were there for her when she was the head coach the summer league team at the time. So that answer, that first answer, if it was a Spurs assistant, I would pick Becky Hammon. If it was outside the organization, it's kind of like what Colin said. I'd want an assistant. I don't have a specific name, but for me, it would be someone from Coach Mike Budenholzer's staff, one of the assistant coaches there, and it'd be someone just to bring that system that they bring on both ends of the floor, where, like, you know, you see the pictures of their practice where, like, they have the X's like so far out of the 3-point line, you know, like everybody go to these the whole spacing thing that they worked on the last 2 years or 3 years, and then also like on defense, just their approach of the way they play defense and the kind of philosophy that they bring in, the shots that they want to take away and the shots that they will allow. And so just kind of seeing what could a coach like that do with the Spurs team, even though, you know, they don't have a lot of shooting, which we're going to get to that in a question in a bit, and just kind of see what kind of a system coach I guess what would provide that kind of system for these Spurs players, to see how they would adapt with that kind of group. So again, that's just kind of where my answer is on that question. Our next question comes from at skinny_banana. The question is, should the Spurs build around DeJounte Murray? What's your answer there?
So build around is such an interesting kind of concept. He's not like a generational superstar to the level of like a LeBron or a Giannis or even a Zion, where like you are going to base every decision you make on the team to how does this decision work with DeJounte Murray. You know, he's not that level of player, but I do think that if the Spurs see him as a long-term piece, they do have to build around him in a sense that he is, you know, elite on the defensive end. He has made strides on the offensive end, but he still has some limitations. So for them to have a elite team, they are going to have to specifically surround him with players that kind of cover those weaknesses. We talked about like maybe catch and shoot, off-ball shooting, creation as some of these things that the Spurs are going to look for in the offseason. And there's no coincidence why when that is something that is kind of low in general on their team. And his creation improved over his career so far for sure, and this season was the best one for that. But it's still not a strength to the level of, you know, they would honestly need another creator, maybe even a main creator, and more off-ball shooting if he is a long-term piece of this team. But not building around him in the sense of every single decision they make from a team construction standpoint is going to go through how does this decision affect DeJounte Murray. You know, it kind of building around in terms of covering the weakness, but not in terms of a super duper star the way that you build around that kind of player.
Yeah, I'm with you there, just right there. You know, just, you know, they're slowly kind of building like around him. Like, you know, they're like they're plugging the pieces that they feel is going to best work with this team. That's going to help out DeJounte when he's, you know, either on the ball or off the ball, especially on defense as well. Who's going to be next to him on his sides, out there on the wing. But again, they're not going to, you know, like they're not targeting point guards. Like, we know that because like that's like his position, right? So we know that they're not going to, you know, do that. Whereas, you know, they're still going to plug in their holes of where they want to address it. Whether it's like you mentioned, you know, getting a shot creator, somebody like maybe like resigning DeMar. Or maybe adding some shooting, you know, to help out DeJounte, since you know he's not a volume shooter, or maybe getting another defensive big, you know, like a four to play alongside DeJounte and Jakob. So it's more sort of compliment the team, but I wouldn't say, like you said, you know, since he hasn't like made an All Star, like he's not all NBA level, you know, if unless that had happens in the future, well then I just feel like again they're not going to solely just build it around him specifically, but more so kind of plugging the pieces around him and, you know, Keldon and these other young players, Derek White and all those kind of players, Jakob Poeltl. So again, that's kind of where my answer is on that one. Our next question comes from at TJ Era Mill 01. Question is, are the Spurs aware of the 3-point line? What's your answer there?
So I think they're aware of its existence on one side of the court. They scored 14 threes in games 9 times this season, and their opponents did it 26 times. So I think they understand that the opponents have a 3-point line and how damaging that is to them. But I don't know if they also know that their side of the court has one as well. But yeah, certainly that is the biggest need for improvement, which, you know, no one likes the I told you so or whatever. It is funny that this becomes an issue this summer after all of the complaining we heard about, yes, Marco Bellinelli and Bryn Forbes last season.
I know.
And then they're gone, and oh no, what, the Spurs have no shooters. What's going on? Why are they bad at 3-point shooting? I don't know. The guy that just scored more points than Jimmy Butler in an NBA playoff series walked away, and fans were incredibly happy about that. And like, maybe Bryn Forbes wasn't a perfect fit for this team, but he obviously brought skills that this team needed. And I think that that was maybe a little bit overlooked during his tenure with the Spurs, and the Spurs are maybe missing that a little bit right now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think it was Mike and I, or just the week before, we discussed that here on the Spurscast. It's like, yes, you know, there is improvement defensively, but we saw that the scale tipped the other way, where, you know, 3-point shooting, all of a sudden they're in the 20s this year in terms of rank. So like they weren't very good. They weren't a very accurate team, and we saw that. And so, and also you see what Bryn Forbes is doing with Milwaukee right now, and he's playing a different role than what the Spurs had him in as well. That's a big part of it. So I really feel like, yes, they are aware of the 3-point line, and that's why this is a huge summer for a lot of these young players. You know, we know that, you know, Derek White's going to make his threes or shoot the threes. You know, Devin Vassell's got it. Lonnie Walker's got it. That's three players out of the players returning, because again, we don't know if Patty and Rudy Gay are coming back. So all of a sudden, this becomes a huge summer for players like DeJounte Murray, who has commented that he wants to work on his 3-point shot. Keldon Johnson, we saw, you know, teams leave him open. Younger players are going to get some minutes most likely next season. Guys like Trey Jones, he needs to add that to his arsenal, because that's not something that he goes for, that shot. Lucas Samanich, again, if he gets an increased role next year, that's going to be something that he takes threes, but again, is he going to make them next year? That's going to be a huge question. And then and then you still got two bigs out there who don't usually shoot threes, and that's Jakob Poeltl and Drew Eubanks. I don't expect Poeltl to develop a 3-point shot, but you know, Eubanks has shown that he's worked on it. So again, would he be willing to start taking some in games? So yeah, I feel like it's just a big summer for a lot of these players, because you know, there's a lot of these players that are coming back that played this year, and again, they don't have that shot, the volume there, and the accuracy. So that's something that they have to work on. And again, I think the Spurs will address it as well with free agency. They'll try to look for some players as well to add through free agency, like you and I talked about, some different shooters. And so yeah, it's a huge issue, and I feel like, yeah, like definitely, like that was the main area this year where they got outscored, was that 3-point line. So that's something to watch, definitely. And so yeah. Let's go to our last question here. This comes from at Toby_Simmons. The question is, would you bring back Patty and or Rudy? If so, for how much? Go ahead.
So I can see your notes here, but I actually, in an audio piece I did about the offseason, exactly agreed with you for Patty for the room exception. Honestly, I do think that is a little bit of an underpay, just kind of considering that he does have the most valued skill of shooting right now, and he has his weaknesses, but he really can do things that help a bench unit. But I also think that Patty is someone who's A, willing for the Spurs to wait to see how this offseason shakes out, and B, we saw last year in the bubble, he kind of stepped back and took more of a mentorship and a coach approach, really, and he played when they needed him to play, but he wasn't even expected to play at all, and he came. And I think, you know, I don't know if he's okay with that rule, but I know he's not, you know, so upset by it that it caused him to have issues with the team. And just knowing what his relationship has been with this team and with the players who have retired, I would imagine that he would like to continue that role versus mm-hmm. going somewhere else that might not be as good of a situation. So I actually do think that Patty will probably be back, and I think that the room exception is a perfect amount for that, even though he could probably get more if he were to go somewhere else. Rudy, that one's a little bit tougher because of mm-hmm. the situation that I just said with the waiting. Rudy, I think, could get offers from some of the contenders just because he is a wing who maybe isn't going to play for them all the time, but in like spot playoff series where his specific skill set is better than other bigs or other wings in their lineup, they can bring him out and play him. That's something that I feel like we've seen contenders do quite a bit, where there are players who don't play a lot during the regular season, but they'll play a lot during one playoff series just because they're right for that matchup. And I think that Rudy Gay could be that player for a contender, and especially because there are players out there who it seems like the Spurs are interested in who are restricted free agents, the money that they could want to use for Rudy Gay, even though they do have bird rights on him, but the money that they're going to be looking at is going to be tied up for the first couple of days on free agency while they're waiting for these offer sheets to go through. And so is Rudy going to want to sit around and wait to see what the outcome of that is? I think maybe, but I think that he's going to have offers out there that could cause him to look, not because he's unhappy, but just because he'll have a role on a team that could win it all, in my opinion. Kind of the break glass in case of emergency type of player. Wesley Matthews was the player that I was trying to think of in terms of like just fills that role very well for the Lakers this season. And I feel like we've been seeing that a lot over the past couple of years of just these players who don't play a lot, but then they just work for certain playoff matchups and they end up being really valuable. And I think that Rudy could fit that for either LA team, the Brooklyn teams, like the Brooklyn team, I guess.
Yeah.
just that kind of thing. So I do think that he could get a look from a good team before the Spurs know exactly what they're doing with that offseason, and that makes the chance of him coming back quite a bit lower to me.
Okay, so for my answer here, you know, when they're asking me specifically, like, would you bring back Patty or Rudy? So if I was a GM here in this scenario, I wouldn't, just because I want to see what Trey Jones can turn into. I want to see what Lucas Shimonis can do, and again, those two players being back might get in the way. However, do I think the Spurs might bring one of these two players back? Yes, I agree with you. I think that it might be Patty. Could be, you know, around the room exception, that amount. And I just want to credit Bobby Marks, because I did get that number from him as well. He was kind of projecting that Patty might be, you know, the room exception might be the amount for Patty, which is about $5 million. Whereas Rudy, you know, I'm kind of just projecting he's more like an MLE player, only because, you know, there's not a lot of cap space out there, and the teams that are going to be, you know, it's going to be most of the contenders are going to want him this offseason, and so those teams are going to all mainly have the MLE, which is about $9.5 million. So again, I wouldn't expect him to come back to the Spurs, but you know, it wouldn't shock me if Patty re-signs, just because, you know, like you said, you know, the ties to the organization, all the years, the culture that he's built here with the Spurs, and how he's just part of the community and part of the city, you know, and you could just see Patty, you know, signing like a 3 or 4 year deal, and just, you know, like you said, you know, maybe even reducing his role and just kind of helping out more so in like that player development part of helping the younger players as they come along, and then, you know, eventually, you know, retiring and then getting his you know, just retiring. So yeah, so again, I wouldn't be shocked if Patty resigns. So yeah, so again, thank you, Spurscast listeners, those of you that follow on Twitter, for sending us those questions. You know, we'll definitely start doing more of this as the off season's here, because, you know, there's not much going on yet until the lottery comes, and then the draft, and then of course free agency, not until August, so it's quite a ways away. So before we close this episode out, don't forget to visit productspurs.com. We have a promotion, as we've mentioned, with Sabotage Wrestling. It's the Sabotage Wrestling presents The Thrill of It All Live, Sunday, June 13th at 5:00 p.m. It is at the Vibes Event Center on 1211 East Houston Street in San Antonio, Texas, 78205. If you want more information, visit sabotage/wrestling.com. Three winners get two tickets each. So again, quote tweet the episode and we'll randomly pick. Also, make sure you're visiting Project Spurs, because Benjamin Bornstein's getting prepared for the draft. He has his latest prospect watch over Matthew Hurt, and I'll continue to speak more often with Ben, because, you know, as the draft approaches, I want to get. And I know some of you all might have had some questions that you sent in about the draft, and I purposely saved those just for whenever I have Ben on, because I want to make sure that we get his opinion on those. And then also, like I mentioned earlier in the episode, I am building this huge free agent database, 2021 free agent database. It's going to be over on our other site for Project Spurs Network called AnalyzingTheLeague.com. So again, I'm working on daily, so as soon as it's all finished, you know, it's already up there. You can kind of look at it right now. It has players listed by their cap hold, and then another list has players, free agents listed by their height, and I'm adding something like, you know, career three-point percentage, and then some different defensive metrics. So again, for me, it just gives me more background on all the free agents, not just you know, the specific ones we're looking at for the Spurs. So thanks again to Colin for joining me here on the Spurscast, and to Michael DeLeon for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.